Episode 273, The Longevity of the Planet of the Apes.
You said the longevity, right?
Yeah, I think so.
It's the longevity of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
And I'm Ben DiBono, and we're back, everyone. Here we are talking about those apes! Monkeys with guns!
You know, maybe it's not the, because if you look at the other ones, it's Battle for, Dawn of, Rise of,
so maybe Beneath.
Beneath, Escape from. So there's never the. I think I'm just going to put the in there.
Tomato, tomato.
So here's what's going to happen on this episode, everybody. We're going to talk in depth and spoiler filled about Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, the recent movie that came out just last weekend as we record this.
Yeah.
That will be the bulk of the conversation.
Right.
Maybe at the back end of this conversation, we can talk a little bit about Planet of the Apes, the franchise, maybe some of my thoughts.
You're going to rank the movies?
I'm going to rank them all. Ben hasn't seen any except for Rise of and Dawn of and the 2001 remake.
Yeah, the Tim Burton. So I'm going to rank those.
Okay. I know exactly how you rank them already.
Yeah,
so,
it's pretty obvious.
Otherwise, I mean, Ben doesn't have a huge history with the franchise. I have more of a fan history, but I'm no expert, to be honest. No Planet of the Apes expert. So if you're here...
Guys, listen, because we're entertaining, because we know what we're talking about.
This is what I want to say. If you're here today, this is what I want you to get from it. A good movie review.
Yeah.
The stuff at the end, that's just for fun.
Yeah.
So,
and then there's going to be a story time. You're going to hear about my vacation.
Oh, right. This was teased like 3 episodes ago.
Yeah.
So we're going to find out, how did the vacation go? Good or bad?
Did it turn the fortunes of a Ben DiBono vacation?
We'll find out soon.
Yeah.
So this is going to be spoilers about the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Stop listening if you haven't seen that movie. All right, well, here we are in the spoiler section. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Matt.
So you and I went and saw this first ever triple date. You brought your wife, yeah. I brought my wife, and I also brought a friend and his wife.
Reggie,
well,
yeah.
I guess both of them are my friends, but you know what I mean.
Well, Reggie's been on some of the videos. People
Reggie,
know,
that's right. Yeah. Yep, Reggie and his wife. So, so 6 friends all together watching the Planet of the Apes Dawn.
Right.
Now, do you feel like when you really look at the 2 stories that the title should have been flipped? Like maybe the last one with James Franco should have been the Dawn. And this one should have been the Rise.
Because this was much more of an uprising.
Much more. Oh, that's what it should have been called. Uprising of the whatever.
That would have been a little weird though, to have Rise of the Planet of the Apes and then Uprising of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah,
and
you're right. So my initial prediction, we sat by each other at the theater and we both guessed. I said 3 and you said
4.
And the final score for me was a 3.
2.5.
You said 3 when we left.
2.5.
You brought it down.
Okay, I can think about it more. Yeah.
All right, all right.
Yeah, 2.5.
So, you know, that's funny. I don't want to be a downer. I know Ben doesn't mind this, but I love the Planet of the Apes franchise, even though I know most of the movies aren't very good. I just have a love for them.
Yeah.
I'll tell that story later. And I went in here with very high expectations, but I didn't want...
Well, I don't think 3 is very high expectations.
Well, hold off. I went... Before I actually gave you my rank there, sitting down, I'd been hearing critics are loving this. The early responses are really great.
Right.
So I'm thinking this is going to be the best Planet of the Apes of all time. But when I saw the trailers, it didn't speak to me in that way. So I decided, as you asked me at the theater, what do you give this? I'm going to be medium excited before we go into this, and
medium
I said
excited.
3.
Yeah.
So I was sort of expecting a 5, to be honest, but when I had to actually give a guess that I was standing behind, I went with 3 because it just didn't speak to me necessarily from what I saw trailer wise. Why did you give it a 4 or like as a guess?
Well, because I'm not like the big what you'd think of as a summer movie. You know, those aren't really my cup of tea. Yeah. But I all the talk I'd heard of it said this is more than just the summer blockbuster. This is an intelligent movie. It has something meaningful to say. So I thought, this is going to be up my alley. I liked the first one, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, that is. And so I was thinking, I'm going to give it a 4, and it could possibly surpass that. And it didn't.
It did not.
It did not.
So, yeah, I liked it a 3. But even that, I mean, when I was... I think Des, my wife, later asked me, what was your favorite scene? And it took me a long time to even think of one favorite scene. There was nothing... I think what I liked the most about it was... I mean, the visuals were stunning.
Right.
And Andy Serkis
is great.
Is great. Caesar is a very well-developed character.
Absolutely.
But that's where it stops.
He's the only well-developed character in this entire movie.
And we do follow the humans a lot. And I didn't feel connected to even one of the humans, even the Star.
No.
So,
none of the humans really have a story arc. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a big problem when you have the entire cast being people you don't care about. Because if you don't care about the characters, you don't necessarily care about what's happening to them. So the only one I cared about was Caesar. And I mean, I think that's kind of where the problems lie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that, you know, and to a certain degree, people are right that this movie does want to say something. It doesn't just want to be a bunch of action, action, action. And I applaud that instinct. I think we need more of that in Hollywood. But the problem is that it just is so incompetent in the way it goes about saying what it wants to say. And it doesn't trust itself enough to have that happen organically. So the story beats to get us to that message feel very manufactured throughout this movie.
I'm not trying to be negative, but when you hear people say this was maybe the best movie of the summer so far, Where is that coming from? Like, when you've read things,
I don't know. I mean, I wonder if part of it is that people are just so burned out by Transformers type stuff that when they see something that it is genuinely trying to do better, and it is well made from everything but the script in this movie is good. The acting's good, the directing's good, the visuals are good.
The visuals are great. And it's so, when you see the whole ape army encompass the human city, it really looks cool, and you feel the strength and the power of their numbers.
Absolutely.
You do kind of wonder how, you know, in 10 years, how do they grow to be so big? Because it started with just a small group of escaped apes from the...
Apes grow fast? I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So,
okay. We didn't get into ape metabolism a lot.
Yeah.
But yeah, so for example, when I say that it feels manufactured, so essentially this movie, what it wants to say, and I think this is an important message, is that when there's conflict between groups and violence comes out, nobody wins.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and that message resonates with me a lot, but it's much like a lot of Christian movies where I might agree with the message, but that doesn't make it a good movie just because you agree with the message. So what we wind up having happen is that slowly things escalate and escalate between the apes and the humans until violence and war breaks out and all that. But for example, where it feels really contrived is that we have this character's name, I think, is Carver. I don't remember. The guy
Carver,
from Fringe.
The guy from Fringe, yeah. He played Charlie on Fringe. He was Carver in this movie. Just a jerk for no reason.
Yeah, he's a jerk for no reason. And then, so in the initial encounter with the apes, he winds up shooting one of them. And that's when tensions start. And it's like, okay, I can buy that. You know, he's a hothead. He was brought along, got put in a bad situation. But then they know that in the future. Mm-hmm. And so then they go up to repair this power plant later on when they come back to the apes. And they bring him along.
Well, and they make a big deal about saying, we need him because he's the only one that knows how to repair the power plant.
And then he does nothing with repairing the power plant. No. In fact, he's sent to sit in the car for half the time.
Yeah, he gets in trouble, gets sent away, and they repair it totally fine without him. They don't even mention that they're having troubles without him.
Yeah, exactly.
And, I mean, of course he brings a gun because he's already established that he hates apes. And he already shot one. He is the one that the apes should be most mad at, and they bring him of all people. I mean,
exactly. Yeah, and they don't even send him away, though. They send him to sit in the car.
Mm-hmm.
That's literally that's what he does while they're up there working. He's not sent back to San Francisco. He's sent to the car. And so that's where I say that the story doesn't develop its theme organically. It's that we need to have our characters do stupid things and make stupid decisions in order to force the story to get to the message we want.
I'd agree with that, and I'll add on to that. So the main character's name is Malcolm, and we don't really know all of his motivations. Like, when the ape army shows up at the human city for the first time, he alone steps out to meet them. And I don't think it's really established that he's a leader. In fact, Gary Oldman really comes off as a leader.
Right.
So I don't know why Malcolm is the one that goes out there. But at that point, he has a great opportunity to say, I understand you're upset. Just so you know, here's what we were coming up there for, the power plant. And he could have explained it right there, but instead, he gets told, don't come back. And then the very next thing he does is go back to explain himself, where it's like, well, take that quick opportunity to tell them what's going on.
Exactly.
But the only reason they don't have that communication is because the story needs them to not have that communication.
Exactly. So, it's very manufactured.
I want to talk about a bunch of things. Well, okay, let's come back to Gary Oldman. I know you have some things about that. I also want to come back to, I should just write some quick notes. Talk about when we first exited the theater, you'd said you felt like the movie started and ended in the same place with the human ape relations.
Exactly. Is that the movie starts with humans and apes are segregated with a lot of tension, and it ends with humans and apes segregated with slightly more tension. And, you know, I'd be okay with the movie being a character piece that doesn't necessarily move the story forward a ton, or a thematic piece, but the fact that it didn't really accomplish either of those makes it feel like, okay, this series obviously wants to advance the plot to the point where the apes are in charge of the planet, hence mm-hmm. the title of the series. Well, it's like, where are we going to be at next movie? Are they going to get to Oakland? You know, like, movie 10, are we going to be down to San Diego by that point?
Well, okay, so I did want to disagree a little bit, because I feel like they're segregated at the beginning of the movie in a way where the apes don't even know if humans still exist. They haven't seen them in 2 years. It's been 10 right. years since the infection spread, the simian flu. And then by the end of the movie, we not only have them at odds with each other, but I think something important changes in Caesar's perception of the world, and that's that he, at the beginning of the movie, feels like apes are better than humans, and they have the rule, apes don't kill apes.
Yeah.
By the end of the movie, he realizes that apes are as fallen as humanity, in a sense, and that right. everybody's bad, and so there is no stopping the oncoming war. And so, what do you think about that? I know that this movie tackled some themes, you mentioned war, but also just about humanity's fallen nature.
Right.
Talk about that.
Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm exaggerating to make a point, but Caesar's character certainly develops. It's just, it isn't, I think the lack of development, the amount that we move forward in this movie doesn't justify an entire movie in the franchise.
Okay.
It reminds me a little bit of Terminator Salvation, though this is a better movie than Terminator Salvation, where it's like Terminator Salvation wanted to set up this huge epic story and it accomplished nothing. You know, it just accomplished so minimal in terms of setting up a plot, and it just felt so small in what it was trying to do.
I do actually agree with you in some sense, because let's just real quickly, for people out there that maybe hearing this and the listener is thinking, I don't agree with what Matt and Ben are saying, let's just talk about what actually was accomplished. So
yeah,
we did get the power plant started.
Yep.
So the electricity came back on, and we did get to a point where the apes are now at war with humanity.
Yes.
I think we also got to a point, like I mentioned, where Caesar doesn't trust apes or humans. He knows that everybody has a propensity for evil.
Yep.
But I don't know what else was accomplished beyond that.
Yeah, and even saying they're at war with humanity is a little bit of a stretch. At the end, we saw a fight in San Francisco, but so far it hasn't spread beyond that.
And we're told that there is a military envoy coming, maybe?
Yeah.
But we don't even know that for a fact, because that information came to somebody off screen and then they relayed it to us. So we don't know if we can trust a narrator in that sense.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I'm guessing that's probably what's going to happen.
So war is probably going to break out shortly, but hasn't at the end of this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So not a lot happened. I do think things changed, but it was a slight change. And just to echo what you said, it may not have been enough to deserve an entire movie. And the movie was kind of long.
Yeah.
There were points where I felt definitely like it was dragging and I was just kind of ready for it to get someplace.
I was thinking, where's my Kindle?
Really? No, you were not.
A little bit.
That bored.
Yeah.
Let me just talk about my least favorite scene, because like I said, Dez asked me my favorite scene. If I had to, you know, on the spot, I had to answer her, I chose the battle between Cato and Caesar at the end.
Totally agree.
That's probably the best thing to happen. But
oh, no, that would be one of my least favorites.
The fight.
Yeah.
Okay, but here's the worst thing. I want to come back to your favorite and least favorite, but my least favorite, by far, this is hands down, the ape's name is Cato, right?
Yeah.
How do you spell it? K-A-T-O?
I don't know.
I might be wrong with that. Work. Anyways, the bad ape. Everybody knows. There's Caesar's general who turns on him, shoots him, then takes over. It just gets crazy when they first start the war, and it's kind of, I mean, I think they're trying to be cool, like action movie cool, but it was dumb. You've got this ape riding on a horse, which is cool, but with not one gun but two, just shooting them off, and then and that was cheesy to me. Like, that's, I think I might have chuckled a little bit because it was too much.
Yeah.
But then where I actually shook my head and was like, no, that's dumb, is he jumps through not like a pile of fire but like a wall of fire.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, full of fur on a horse, and not one inch of him is singed or burned or burning. That was like this scene is already dumb, and you just made it 10 times worse.
You also have the issue of that none of these apes, they have very primitive weapons. And then all of a sudden, within a matter of a couple hours, they're able to learn to handle, reload, and fire automatic machine guns with no training whatsoever.
Yeah, that might be a problem.
Yeah, so there's a huge plot hole there.
Sorry, I'm right now. That's okay. That was me. I'm searching what that character's name is. I think I've been spelling it wrong.
Yeah, I think it's K-A-D-O.
Nope, not there.
Oh, my.
That beeping sound means it's not finding the word we're looking for. Why don't you talk about your favorite... Oh, here, Koba, not Koda. We're way off.
Okay, that Koba, makes sense.
K-O-B-A.
Yeah.
So Koba, huge jerk.
Yeah, huge jerk.
And you know he's evil because...
He has cataracts in one eye.
And he's scarred.
Yeah.
One more good thing. This is kind of cool. When Koba, you could kind of see why he's so mad, because humans prior to the simian flu did experiment on him.
Right.
And so when Caesar said that he was going to just let the humans do the human work, and then maybe they could have peace, Koba starts pointing at his multiple scars and was saying, human work. And that is a good point.
Right.
So you can see why he's mad. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, favorite stuff. I don't know. I mean, I do like Caesar's character arc in this movie for the most part. I don't necessarily like what happens at the end with the whole fight between him and Koba.
No, why didn't you like that? Because, I can't even think of a... It's hard for me to pick a favorite scene, but why didn't you like the one-on-one fight between these two?
Oh, it got really cliched. I mean, how many fights on top of a tower do we need to see in movie history before we just get sick of it? And then, you know, the bottom drops out from under them, but there's two chains there so they can swing on vines like monkeys and have a fight in the air. It's so contrived. But then the real reason I didn't like that is that, so this whole message about, you know, violence begets violence. When violence happens, nobody wins. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, Caesar kills Koba. You know, he lets him fall. And it's like the complete, for the sake of a Hollywood cliche, we got to kill the villain. It completely flies in the face of the message we've been hearing that this movie's trying to drive home about the futility of violence. And this is what Caesar's character has supposed to have learned throughout this movie. And then he resorts to it at the very end.
That's interesting. It also... For a franchise fan, it does echo a scene from the fifth Planet of the Apes movie where the Caesar of that franchise or that that universe, he is chasing after the bad guy in that movie, a gorilla, of course. Gorillas are bad.
Yeah, yeah.
And the character does fall. The bad guy falls to his death, but not at the hands of Caesar. More Caesar just doesn't stop it from happening. So
right.
In a sense, he killed him, but because he could have saved him.
Right.
But in this case, our Caesar from this reboot actually has him by the arm and lets him go.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I could definitely see what you're saying there.
So I think it's thematically problematic, and just very cliched fight scene.
Okay. Back to themes. We talked about humanity's fallen nature also affecting the apes. We talked about the war themes. At the very end, we get a strong religious theme in which Caesar supposedly, or to the apes, apparently back from the dead.
Yeah.
And the light shines in on him. Michael Giacchino's music comes up like heavenly. And it basically makes Caesar out to be the Messiah, a godlike character. And in some interviews, the director has said they're going to continue that theme into the next movie where they basically are going to start worshiping Caesar as a godlike character. So what did you think about how that all came together? Do you buy that?
Not really, because I mean, once people, it takes like 10 seconds to explain, look, I wasn't really dead, I just shot a little bit. I mean, it's just kind of absurd. The movie doesn't earn that for the other apes to react to Caesar's character.
Well, that was like the final scene, wasn't it? They all bow down to him, basically.
Yeah. And it doesn't earn that. He's already been their leader, so it's like, oh, the guy we've been following for the last 10 years didn't really die, just got a little injured. He's okay. I don't see why they would start bowing down to see. It doesn't earn that moment.
Okay. Yeah, you know, going back to Caesar actually dropping Koba, I wonder if that was the breaking point for him, where he thought apes were better than humans, and then he realizes we're no better, and then he says to Malcolm at the end, I don't necessarily want this war, but we did start it, and humans won't forget it, so I have to fight back for this family, the ape family.
Right.
I wonder if killing him was just kind of like, well, we're screwed. Let's just move on. We're obviously bad as the humans.
Yeah.
Interesting. Gary Oldman, completely wasted.
Complete. Well, maybe we should talk about the other human characters, too.
Let's start with Gary.
So Gary Oldman, man, what a great actor. And he does a great job in this movie, but he's given nothing to work with.
Well, he is given a few packets of C4.
That's true.
Which...
So here's
that C4 did nothing, no, right? He planted some C4, supposedly to take down the whole tower, and it moves it a little bit.
There's a giant fireball that comes up. It's you know, if he sets this off, it's going to kill all the apes. Well, it dropped him a story.
To be fair, he didn't finish setting it up all around because Malcolm came and interrupted things, but yeah. He probably should have known this is not enough. But okay, no. Go ahead, Gary Oldman.
So there's a scene in the middle of the movie where the power comes back on in San Francisco. And everybody's just out dancing stupidly in the streets for no reason whatsoever. But it'll be that as it may. And in some blatant product placement, Gary Oldman's got his iPad out.
Yeah.
It
makes a little sound, yeah, to let you know it's been charged.
Right. So he starts flipping through the photos, and he sees photos of his family, and he breaks down crying. And Gary Oldman is fantastic in the scene. But it doesn't resonate in the movie because we've only seen Gary Oldman's character for about 5 minutes in the movie prior to this, and that was an hour ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know nothing about this guy. We've only seen him for a few minutes, and then we're supposed to be invested in this big emotional scene. We don't know anything about his family. We don't know anything about his background, his motivations, mm-hmm, his history, nothing.
And I think a flaw in the movie is that the humans are completely aware that this simian flu was not caused by the apes, but that it was, they even know where it came from Genesis and San Francisco. So this is common knowledge. But various characters, including Gary Oldman and including Carver from Fringe, they act as if the apes are to blame. And so, right, you know, with Gary Oldman at the end planting the C4 and wanting to kill the apes, and you know, in one sense, you could say he wants to save humanity, but in another sense, it definitely feels like this is a revenge mission. And when you have him crying over his kids, it gives that same feeling. It's like that was sort of a moment where he's seen his kids, he's sad over it, and so because of that, he's just crazy with revenge. But we all know the apes aren't the ones that killed his family. The humans killed them.
Exactly. And then, you know, he makes the big turn to being totally against the apes, and he just starts yelling a few times, oh, they're animals. And that's supposed to be the sum total of his, that's all we get to indicate that he's switched from being on the fence to completely anti-ape. And you just have to wonder, because it's like you have apes riding on horses, firing guns and talking to you. It makes him come across as an idiot at that point.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, the movie could write in legitimate reasons for him to be angry at the apes, but thinking that they're animals just doesn't hold up given everything that's going on around him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, you said you wanted to mention some other characters, so who do you want to start with?
Well, I want to talk about the group that goes out to the power. We've already mentioned Malcolm and Carver a little bit.
Okay.
But then we get Malcolm's son, who does nothing in the movie except draw pictures.
Do you have any idea what his name is?
No clue.
Me either.
And he comes along for some reason. And what his point is in the movie, I don't know. We get quite literally a token black guy who I think is along just to show that they're ethnically diverse. And I don't mean that to be flippant. I really think that's what's going on. It's like the definition of token black character, because he has no name that we know of.
I'm sure he has a name.
Well, yeah, he does nothing. There was another person in the group who I didn't even realize was there for about the first half of the movie, and then I saw him walking around. Oh, there's another guy there. But then my favorite is Ellie, who is, what's her name's character? Carrie Russell's character. Who, again, we're supposed to believe that she and Malcolm are living together or married or something, and she's living with him and his son. And there's a moment where she mentions that she had a daughter who had died, and the son's like, oh, you have a daughter?
Yes, I totally know what you mean.
It's like, wait a second. They're They're like living together.
They're a family.
They're a family.
And that never came up.
He's like as surprised as we are. That's the last we hear of the daughter for the rest of the movie.
Well, it was supposed to be the moment that brought the stepmom and the son or stepson, maybe. And we don't even know if they're married. It seems like that's the type of relationship.
Whatever.
And
so
it brings them together and they kind of tear up a little bit together. But yeah, you're totally right. It's how could that have not come up at some point?
Exactly. And that, again, robs it of all of its emotional power. Because if it wasn't important for her enough to mention the fact that she had a daughter until now, and it's just this casual 2-second thing between them, why should it matter to us in the audience?
Okay, so you'd mentioned before that Carver gets sent to the truck. So he gets killed. Okay, so then that leaves with 5 members, and they all fix the power plant. So we've got the 3 family members, the Malcolm, Carrie Russell, and son, and then the 2 other guys that you mentioned. Now, in the scene where Caesar gets shot and Koba's taken over and the orangutan whispers to them that they should run, the 5 of them take off.
Yeah.
Okay. At this point, we don't ever see the other 2 guys ever again. the family member, the dad, the stepmom, and the son, they obviously, we follow their story, but they never again mention their 2 friends who are completely lost.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess we can assume the apes got them, or maybe they were trampled, or maybe they have their own story going on.
But we don't know.
But as an audience, we are introduced to these characters who we don't know the name of, we don't know what their skills are, and we never are told what happens to them. Completely gone.
So the other part of Carrie Russell's character that drove me nuts is that we get a throwaway line about how she used to work for the CDC.
Mm-hmm.
And in the movie's mind, this makes her an expert on all forms of medicine. So she's now, at various points in the movie, an expert on diseases, which makes sense. She worked for the CDC. She's an expert on human medicine. She's an expert on veterinary medicine, and she's an expert on surgery. And that's this movie's idea of character development, this throwaway line that allows us to have this character to do all these sorts of convenient things for the plot.
Yeah.
So drove me nuts.
Do you remember the actress Judy Greer? Do you know her?
Yeah.
She was on Arrested Development and other things. She was actually Andy Serkis's wife, Caesar's wife.
Why did they have an actress play that role? She did nothing but lay there.
And like whine a little bit?
Yeah,
I have no idea.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the cast list here. So yeah, we've pretty much covered all the human cast members, and now you understand why we're saying
there's 2 more.
No, there's not.
Yeah, there is.
Who else?
There's the 2 guys who are shooting at the truck.
Oh yeah. I forgot about them.
This is amazing to me. So when Malcolm and company go off to the power plant, Gary Oldman says, well, I'm going to head over to the fort. We're going to test all the weapons and make sure everything's working just in case things go bad. Makes sense. So then Koba sneaks over there and he comes across 2 guys who are shooting machine guns at a truck. Let's first of all think about this activity. They're supposed to be testing weapons. That's what we've been told the purpose is here. And instead they're wasting ammo shooting a truck that could be used, that appears to be otherwise in perfectly good condition.
Yeah.
And then he comes back later in the movie, because this movie likes to repeat scenes like this.
Okay.
And they're doing the exact same thing, this time with a little Johnny Walker Black to help them out. And so
what's Johnny Walker Black?
It's a whiskey.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're drinking.
Yeah, they're drinking.
Okay.
And so this movie's idea of, they're out there testing all these weapons. No, they're not. They're just firing random guns. And that's the extent we see of Gary Oldman's efforts to test all these weapons. And these 2 characters, it's just classic for this movie. Let's have something convenient going on that makes no sense so that we can have Koba find a way to get guns.
Yes. And then 3 apes empty out the entire storage of like a huge warehouse of weapons.
Yep.
They didn't really explain how they got all the weapons to the
apes. They must have tested all the weapons and said, leave them here, guys.
You know what? Actually, I think I take that back. I think they attacked the weapons house first. I think the apes went there first and then to the human city.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, as much sense as they can make.
Yeah, so it's just things like that are just very frustrating.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we kind of covered it. I mean, it's nice movie to look at, but I don't think I'd ever want to watch this again.
No.
There's no reason to. I'd see the 3rd one, and they are going to do a 3rd one. I have the information up here. Let me get the date on that. Actually, I don't have it. It's just 2 years away.
And I think Matt Reeves is coming back to direct.
Yep,
he did a good job.
Here we go. July 29th, 2016, untitled 3rd Planet of the Apes reboot film.
Yeah.
So there it is. So I don't want to say I don't recommend it because it really, we've talked a lot about, we've nitpicked about it a lot. I gave it a 3. That's a medium. I think your 2.5 is fair.
Yeah.
Because the story isn't that great. But if you haven't seen it and you liked Rise of the Planet of the Apes, I'd say see this one. Just don't expect a lot of it. Don't believe the hype.
Yeah, it's maybe worth waiting until it's on video, though.
Yeah.
Or DVD. I mean, my 2.5, though, is taking into account the acting and the directing of visuals and everything. If I'm just rating the script, this is like half a star for me.
All right. Well, should we now transition to my big talk on the franchise as a whole?
Let's do it.
All right. Well, here's some music. So that this is the end of our Dawn of the Planet of the Apes review.
Yeah. Oops. That's some good music.
Wrong button. And now it's time for a countdown.
All right. I like the Tim Burton movie the least. I like Rise the best. Dawn's in the middle.
Welcome to the Perfect. Sci-Fi Christian Countdown.
On the Sci-Fi Christian. All right, everybody. Well, we're going to count down these 8 Planet of the Apes films. You've just heard Ben's ranking. And I will
knock it out before the music was over.
I'll go ahead and give you mine. Ben, if you would start with number 8. After I tell you the movie that it is, I'll then give a brief description on why I feel this way. Brief.
Okay.
I probably should have mentioned this when we originally recorded this episode, but you're about to be exposed to all-out spoilers for the entire franchise of Planet of the Apes, not just the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. So get ready. If you haven't seen any of the movies that have come out that have to do with Planet of the Apes, then stop listening, or just don't. If you don't mind, then that's okay too. So here it comes. Spoilers. You've been warned. You're going to find out the ends of a lot of these movies. So if you haven't seen these classic movies, go check them out. I'd say for sure at least just watch the original 1968 movie, I believe it came out. Yep, just checked. 1968. So check that one out. Love it. Definitely recommend Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Beyond that, some of the other ones are fun. But like I said, we're going to go into a full spoiler discussion. I do remember when we recorded this, I was forgetting the lead actress's name. So you will hear me mention Roddy McDowall, who was one of the lead actors, but also Kim Hunter. She was the female ape. So just a little pre-explanation to something I'm positive I'm going to forget when you hear our actual discussion here coming up next. Number 8.
And can you tell, for the older ones, can you say where, because I only know Planet of the Apes is the first one.
I've got it all ranked here for you.
All right, number 8.
Number 8 is the second in the franchise beneath the Planet of the Apes. The reason I hate this movie is because everything about it was bad. I remember they wanted Charlton Heston to be in it, but he didn't want to. So they cast a new astronaut to come and save Charlton Heston's character. Charlton Heston did agree to be in the very beginning of the movie. It was kind of like a framing scene. Yeah. In the very end, he had quite a long last scene. But yeah, they spent a lot of time in this movie with this new astronaut kind of rehashing the same things we as an audience already saw in the first movie, but now this new character had to learn everything all over again. There's not only apes in this one, but, and do you mind if I spoil you in these?
Not at all.
Not only apes, but there's also mutant humans who live underground and worship a nuclear bomb that they found.
Oh,
and,
my.
Yep, and they, oh, I forgot, they're also telepathic, which is interesting.
That's crazy.
The end of the movie is, I just remember the first time I saw it, and again the second time, really unsatisfying and kind of shocking the first time we see it. Charlton Heston, in a rage, and wants to stop both the mutants and the apes, decides to activate the nuclear bomb, and the movie ends with Earth blowing up and with a narrator who appears no narrator through the whole movie.
Yeah.
And in the last scene, some narrator, I can't remember the exact lines, but basically, and that was the end of Planet Earth or something like that.
I don't know. You just sold me on it. This sounds better than what we just watched.
I mean, that might not be the exact narration, but that's the idea. That he's basically saying Earth is gone. And so,
wow.
And so that's how it ends. So it's kind of like, well, no sequel after that.
But well, not so fast. Number 7.
Number 7 is going to be movie number 5 called Battle for the Planet of the Apes. Now, this is the last in the original 5 movies. This one has also a framing device where there's a lawgiver ape telling stories to his pupils about the past.
That sounds brutal.
And then you go back to the past, and this is in the early days of the Planet of the Apes, where the apes are smart, but they're also coexisting with humans. And so you start to see how things start to get torn asunder.
Oh, my.
But luckily, at the end of the movie, there's a little bit of a twist. It turns out that the lawgiver's pupils, who we hadn't seen at the beginning of the movie, turns out he's speaking to not just children of ape nature, but also human children. So you're kind of left with this idea that maybe history has been rewritten and that now the humans and apes can coexist, but not so fast. For some reason, they zoom in on a statue of Caesar, who is a character in this franchise as well.
Yeah.
Long dead, but the story was all about him in that movie. And the statue that's not alive sheds one single tear. And it's kind of, it happens over the monologue by the lawgiver teaching these students, and it kind of leaves you with the idea that you're, at first it looks like humans and apes are going to be able to coexist, but the crying indicates that's not so, that they are ultimately going to fight again.
I feel like I want to watch the final scene of both of those movies.
Yep.
Right. Number six.
Number six is the fourth movie in this original franchise, Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. Now, this one has actually, I'm trying to think about this. I think this one does have some pretty strong similarities.
Okay.
Minor similarities to Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And this is where you first get to know the adult version of Cornelius, because he wasn't a baby in some previous movies. So Cornelius is the one, the first ape to talk, and he starts the revolution. So in this movie, you actually see the revolution start, where apes in this alternate history are pets, but also servants to humans. So there was a disease that wiped out, not humans, all dogs and cats. And so because...
apes' next best thing.
Yeah, so because humans couldn't have dogs or cats, they got apes as pets.
Oh.
But then they realized, hey, pets are good, but servants are better.
That's right.
And so you've got scenes where there are apes serving food at restaurants and apes doing your hair. And it's just ape servants everywhere.
That sounds fantastic.
So you've got some themes of slavery happening.
Oh, you think?
Yeah. And so then...
let's not lay that metaphor.
There's re-education centers for apes that aren't obeying well. And, you know, Cornelius...
we're just going right down the list of metaphors. We got slavery, the Holocaust.
Yeah, Cornelius has had enough, and he speaks out and says, no. And yeah, that's the first word that humans hear apes speak. And then he also has some sort of, like, crazy influence power over dumb apes. Because all the apes are animals. Cornelius is the only one that is smarter. And you don't know this yet, because I haven't talked about it. But it's because he's from the future. He's a baby from the future Planet of the Apes, which, you know, got destroyed, but there were some escapees.
Right.
And you'll learn more about that in Escape Of.
Okay.
Or Escape From. So anyways, he is able to influence all the animal apes to revolt with him.
Oh, that's a good
They
good
also deal. Use guns.
Yeah.
All right.
Number five?
Number five is what we're just talking about, the third movie, Escape from the Planet of the Apes. Now,
I'm a little worried about this franchise considering we haven't hit Dawn yet, and given that we just ripped it apart.
I think you should be more concerned that I have 2001 ranked so high.
That does concern me.
No, 2001 should probably be below this one, but I think if I had to sit down and watch one or the other, I think I'd choose to watch the 2001 remake. So, no spoilers for what my next entry is. But Escape from the Planet of the Apes has this story. So, no, I told you, number two ended with the whole world blowing up. So where do you go from there? Well, some of the apes got Charlton Heston's ship that he used to travel through time and get there in the first place. Well, they somehow get to it, figure out how to reactivate it, which the astronaut wasn't able to do.
Yeah.
They follow back his trajectory through time, and then they go back to the exact year that he left.
Right.
But then they talk, which is different than humans were expecting.
I imagine that was a bit of a shocker.
It's really messed up, too, because the female ape is pregnant.
Yeah, with Cornelius.
Yep, and the humans say, you two, the husband and wife, you can live, but we're going to terminate your pregnancy and sterilize the husband because we don't want any smart apes reproducing around here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm pretty sure that this is rated G. Like, all these movies, I think, are rated G.
Rated G.
Until towards the
for
end.
For abortion.
Yeah, so it's messed up.
That's amazing.
But with that being said, there were some funny parts in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I did like some of the interactions. Both the characters, I mean, Roddy McDowall, who I love,
right,
was in it. I think it was Kim forgot her last name. Anyways, Kim is the actor's Kim, actress's Kim's name. There, yeah. She's back as the female ape. And so, yeah, I mean, some good stuff in there, but then it ends sad, pretty sad, because humans just don't trust the apes, and so they shoot them, and they shoot the baby too. They kill them. But remember I told you Cornelius was still alive?
Yeah.
Well, what had happened is the mom had actually swapped out her smart baby with just some random chimpanzee's baby, yeah, and then she was carrying that around. So she actually got this regular chimpanzee's baby murdered.
Oops.
But then a circus started raising young Cornelius.
Oh, good.
And about at the very last scene of the movie is that this little baby says, "Mama."
So I just like to point out here that we're halfway through your top eight list, and all four of the entries are from the original five movies. So you're not necessarily recommending the original franchise.
Well, I mean, if you have to rank them,
that's what happens. Okay, number four.
And now, again, I didn't tell the story yet, but I will after we get to the... Remind me to tell the story of... Actually, this is a good stopping point. Okay. Let's take a little break in the middle of this list.
Yeah.
Here's how it all happened for me. I had never seen anything with the Planet Apes, did not know the twist at the end of the first one.
Yeah.
Then in 2001, we've got the Tim Burton movie coming out. So I decide I'm a sci-fi fan. I have a video rental store right down the street.
Yeah.
I owe it to my knowledge to watch these Planet of the Apes movies. So I think I only rented the first and second one maybe on a Friday night. Had no plans this weekend. So I rented these two, watched the first one, and actually loved it. I really liked the first one, and you'll see on my list. Big fan. Even still, I think it's a pretty good movie. And I didn't know what was going to happen at the end. So I somehow was... saved from knowing the Statue of the Liberty.
Yeah, you know about this, right? Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I didn't know that the Statue of Liberty was going to show up at the end, and so blown away. So I think that shock really helped me.
It
made an impression, made me like the franchise. So then that weekend, that Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I watched all five movies straight through. Well, not straight through. Slept a little bit, ate some stuff. Second one was not good. Third one's kind of funny. You know, just like I've been talking about here.
Yeah. The third one with the abortion was pretty funny.
Yeah. Other than that, fourth and fifth kind of run together, I feel like, as one story. So let's now go to 2001. My number four is the 2001 remake. It's kind of funny. They called this one the remake, and they call our current line the reboot. So whatever that means.
Yeah.
So the reason it's ranked so high is I know it's not a good story, but for some reason I'm kind of into it. I can't explain it. It's a
horrible movie.
No, you can talk about this one. I know a little bit, but I honestly can't explain why I like it. But like, I just had it playing in the other room when you walked in.
Yeah.
And I sort of want to watch. Like, I kind of want to sit down and watch it right now.
Well, you're free to do so. Yeah. As soon as I leave.
Mark Wahlberg. I mean, I know that none of the characters are well developed, but
no,
there's just something about it that I kind of like it, and maybe it's because, in preparation for that movie, I had finally watched all five of the originals, and then I went straight into that. And so I kind of felt, when I saw that one, like I was a Planet of the Apes fan for the first time. And so the emotions I've attached to it are pretty good. The ending, though, let's talk about that. Do you remember it?
Yeah.
The ending, I don't know what it even means. And so it
doesn't make any sense.
Mark Wahlberg travels to a Planet of the Apes. I think it's the future Earth again. I could be wrong that maybe it's just an alien Earth, or an alien planet.
Yeah.
But then when he comes back, he doesn't come back to regular Washington, D.C. He comes back to, like, ape Washington, D.C., where there was an Abraham Lincoln, but it was an ape Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, an Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, that's pretty good. Huh. That's what we should have named the episode.
Abraham.
Dang it. So, I mean, I know I should watch this again, and maybe if I did watch it and we talked about it next week, I'd say, okay, that was bad.
Have you seen it since the theater?
No, I saw it one time since the theater, but it was, like, a year later. Yeah. So it's... I own it, but I really haven't sat down to watch it in years. Like, probably, yeah, I mean, it's probably been almost 15 years. So 12, 13, 14.
Yeah.
Not good with me.
I haven't seen it since the theater, so I don't remember specifics.
I think here's what we should do. Just listen. Before listen to the whole idea. Okay. Watch it, and then do an episode called Abraham Lincoln. That's worth it.
We just want to use the title.
That's worth it.
I don't know. It would take some. I don't think I could do it.
Let's think about it. So
if I can bring alcohol.
Why don't you like it?
Well, I just remember, like, this was a time when I had no standards for movies. I mean, I thought Nicolas Cage was a great actor back then. And so, and this movie is just boring, and I didn't care for it one bit. I was glad when it was over.
We got to watch it again.
Yeah, that That was a selling point. All right, you're number three.
All right, here we go. Again, to some movies everybody will know. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, number three. So after, now this is telling.
Yeah, this is telling. We just ripped this movie and it's number three on your list.
Yeah, and I think that there's going to be some longtime fans that will strongly disagree with me that this shouldn't be so high. But when I really looked at it, I mean, that third one, there were some funny parts in it. I could maybe watch that again. I could maybe watch the fourth one again where the uprising starts. But a lot of the other ones, I kind of based it on, am I interested in seeing it again?
Yeah.
Yeah. This one, because it's fresh, I had mentioned earlier that we didn't necessarily think anything really happened, so I didn't necessarily need to see it again. But it's fresh. It's new. It's got some great visuals. I mean, if I had to sit and watch Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, I wouldn't be in misery. Whereas I feel like if I had to sit down and watch the second one, Beneath, I'd be in misery.
So let's just be clear. Your qualifications for hitting number three on this
misery.
List, you wouldn't be in misery if you had to watch
it.
That's a high standard.
So I'm wondering, now as I made this list, I'm kind of wondering, I love the franchise, but the movies don't speak to that.
You're not selling me.
I think I like the idea of it. I just really like the idea of like, the first one's just so good. Well, let's go to number two.
Number two?
Number two is the first original, I think it's 68 movie. I did put Rise ahead of it because I just thought it was fantastic. And Des actually really liked it, which is, she would never in a million years watch the original Planet of the Apes and enjoy it. So to have her really like Rise of the Planet of the Apes and really look forward to seeing Dawn of the Planet of the Apes because of that one, it was shocking. So I think that speaks a lot for how good it is. So back to the first one. Co-written by Rod Sterling of Twilight Zone fame.
Yeah.
Not Twilight. Ooh, Twilight Zone.
Oh.
So that's awesome. I told you I was struck by the twist. I really like everything about it. This one I'd definitely watch again. So you've seen the first one, right?
No.
Oh, you haven't seen the Charles Nassar one?
No.
Okay. So I guess not much more to say about that I haven't already said. Number one, Rise.
Number one, yeah.
Pretty
good movie.
Talk about Rise.
I liked it. I mean, I didn't love it. I would probably give it 4 stars out of 5.
You're kind of making me feel bad. I think I should have put Dawn of the Planet of the Apes lower.
No, it's okay.
No, you're right. I'll move that around. Here we go. Here's how I'm going to renumber. My new 3 is 2001.
Oh.
My new 4 is number 3, Escape. My new...
The abortion one that you thought was funny.
Yeah. They didn't actually, just to be clear, there was no abortion. They did save the baby. My new 5 will be Dawn. But, you know, close there with the whole conquest of the Planet of the Apes. So, yeah, it's in flux.
So you got...
You could say it's in flux.
I don't think you improve things by moving the Tim Burton movie up to number 3.
It's in flux.
It's in flux.
But for sure, 1 and 2, solid.
So there's 2 movies
that are solid
that you really like.
Yep, and the rest are okay.
Wow.
And okay.
I don't think I'm going to borrow the DVDs.
Okay to horrible, I'd probably say.
All right.
You once promised me that you would do a marathon viewing with me.
I don't think I promised.
Do you remember? Okay. Well, talk about Rise of the Planet of Apes just for like 2 minutes and I'll find that clip.
Okay. Well, James Franco's okay. Jonathan Lichko's all right. We get to see Caesar. It set up a good franchise. I will say that after Dawn, though, it's one of those movies where part of what was exciting about Rise was what's going to come after. And so knowing that what's come after so far anyway has been disappointing makes me maybe like it a little bit less.
Keep talking. How much more can you talk?
Well, I don't remember the movie that well.
You know, Genesis, the organization.
Lots of monkeys. Gotta love that orangutan, Maurice. You know,
Those
monkeys are... rattling the cages, and he gets put into the shelter, and at the end he chooses to go into the forest, and that's a tearjerker.
That was sad.
That was sad.
Yeah, we just watched it last fall, and Des had never seen it before, and she really liked it. I mean, like a lot.
Yeah,
like I think one of her favorite movies she watched with me last year.
Oh my.
I'm going to flash back, Ben, to episode 30.
Oh.
We recorded this on September 11th, 2011.
Oh, my goodness.
Nope, not true. September 5th.
Okay.
So let's just play a little bit of this here. And
Hi, this is...
Oh, remember when we used to do this at the beginning?
Hi, this is C.K. Kubasik, the creator of The Booth at the End, and you are listening to The Sci-Fi Christian.
Yeah, that was a good time.
Just listen to the episode.
So I'm just going to go ahead and fast forward. I don't want to be too distracting, but basically what's going to happen here is I'm going to invite you to watch this whole marathon with me. So
it's
just
interesting because I
make movies. He is acting to an imaginary friend.
You're making a face.
Then we had in all those scenes
exactly
as Gollum. Mm-hmm. He was acting it out. There we go.
So now, sometimes it's kind of confusing when we're actually talking and when it's the past. So let's do a little sound effect. Now, to the past.
And they just replaced them on the CGI, but Elijah Wood and Sean Astin still had somebody to interact with.
Speaking of Andy Serkis.
Yeah.
Ben, you broke my heart this week when I found out that you saw Planet of the Apes without me.
I think that was last week.
I found out right after we recorded.
Oh, yeah. It was a good movie.
I'm yet to see it with anybody, and now most people in my life have seen it. So
you know, I felt a lot less bad after you told me that you were plotting
to see it without you.
Without me.
Yeah, but then I got... did not work out. So
you should see it though.
But he played one of the apes, did he not?
Caesar,
the main ape.
Yeah, he's really good. I would give the movie 4 stars out of 5. Hey, I don't think that it is it's not like a classic, you know, best movie of the year. There's a few weak elements in it, but I really, really enjoyed it. Extremely good movie.
Has this motivated you to take me up on my offer to watch all 5 of the original Planet of the Apes movies in maybe one weekend, maybe not one day?
I do not think I would do it in a weekend. But I would watch them.
All right. I really want to watch them all over the course of a short time, not like one a month.
Yeah.
So you are the one I need to watch this with because we can review them on our YouTube channel.
Okay. Well, I'd be up for that.
And there it is. So this weekend.
That wasn't a promise. In fact, I specifically said I will not watch them.
So there it is.
Yeah.
You said you would. Well, you know, shortly after we recorded that, as a youth director, I actually watched all 5 over the course of like a month with my one youth kid that we had left.
That's a good deal.
Back at Epic Life, our youth group dwindled from 3 to 1 child.
Yikes.
So with that one student, I think that was kind of the end of my tenure as youth director.
Planet of the Apes killed.
We watched all 5 of the Planet of the Apes movies. Didn't make it to 2001 before I retired.
Yeah.
So I did watch them all. It was a good experience. I really did like it. I mean, if I had to, you know, you made me rank them.
See, what you're describing is not a good experience.
You know, see, the thing is, I had to rank the movies, right? So somebody has to be the worst.
Well, I didn't make you rank. That was your idea.
So somebody had to be the worst.
Yeah, so one of them. There were so many contenders, but one of them had to be the worst.
So, I mean, it had to happen. So sorry for anybody that disagrees with my list. Obviously, you know, could have been a little bit better. Quick facts.
I liked your list.
Here's some quick facts. French. The French actually invented the Planet of the Apes.
I know, Pierre Boyle.
Yeah, he wrote a little book called Monkey Planet. And when we translated it into American, it became Planet of the Apes, which is probably a better title than Monkey Planet.
I think we did him a favor.
Planet. Yeah. 1963 is when that came out. Only 5 years later that movie was made. The original movies do have some great science versus faith type themes that we could tackle if we ever did that rewatch together. Thoughts?
I don't think the rewatch, it's not going to happen.
Here are some other themes, you know, workers' rights,
yeah,
civil rights, racism, slavery, political and social themes. Interesting, huh?
Pretty interesting.
Here are some other interesting facts as we wrap up. I can see that this is going downhill. I just found this article today as I was preparing for this episode that little, you know how Blaster sometimes does lesser known facts about movie history? Well, did you know that Arnold Schwarzenegger almost starred in a Planet of the Apes remake in the 1990s?
Oh, that would have been really bad.
Directed by Oliver Stone.
What?
Yes. Here we go. Way back in the early... Oh, you know what this could be? We didn't do this in the last episode.
Take that, science. I don't think this is science.
Well, anytime I read an article, it's sort of like that.
Okay.
Way back in the early 1990s, acclaimed director Oliver Stone was attached to produce a new Planet of the Apes movie meant to revive the franchise from its increasingly wacky run in the 1970s. Stone was pitching a high-concept reimagining of the concept dubbed Return of the Apes. Stone's film, which had none other than the action god Arnold Schwarzenegger attached to star, would have told a time-traveling story about an ancient ape civilization with a ton of biblical and Tolkien-esque undertones. Just look at how he described the project in a decade-old interview with Entertainment Weekly. Here it is, quote. It has the discovery of a cryogenically frozen Vedic ape who holds the secret numerical codes to the Bible that foretold the end of civilizations. It deals with the past versus the future. My concept is that there's a code inscribed in the Bible that predicts all historical events. The apes were there at the beginning and figured it all out.
Wow. I can't imagine that would have been good, but it would have been memorable.
Yes, and here is another local Take That Science.
Take That Science!
The day before Planet of the Apes opened here in Minnesota, you know this happened last week? Last Thursday.
Oh, yeah, the Como Zoo.
In St. Paul, Minnesota, three gorillas at the Como Zoo in St. Paul escaped their main enclosure, but zoo officials say a second gorilla-proof barrier kept the animals from roaming free Thursday morning. So listen to this, Ben. At 9:50 a.m., the zoo officials got a radio call that three gorillas had escaped through an unsecured door behind the scenes of the indoor gorilla habitat. They then told all the visitors to take shelter and eventually got all the gorillas. It actually only took, let's see, they escaped at 9:50. The first two were caught at 10:10. The final one at 10:40.
There's a slippery little guy.
Definitely. So any other comments, Ben, on the books or the comics? Did you know that there were some books that acted as prequels to the 2001 movie?
I know.
Yeah, if you guys want to check it out, go check out Planet of the Apes, The Fall, written by William T. Quick. That came out in 2002. Or his 2003 sequel, Planet of the Apes Colony.
Those sound like winners. Ready for story time?
I'm kind of sensing you want to get to the end of this episode. How do you feel about the apes after this?
I have no interest in going back and rewatching any of the Planet of the Apes. I'll probably see the next movie, though.
Opening weekend, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was number one and made $73 million. I guess that's it.
That's it.
All right. Well, good job, Planet of the Apes. Ben, we'll be watching you soon.
Yeah.
It's sci-fi Christian story time.
Well, how did my vacation go, everyone?
This is what we've really been waiting for.
Because so for those who maybe are new and haven't heard the Disney World, oh, that's something we can do for the hiatus.
Man. Oh, you're in charge of that.
I'll take care of that. So we'll have the Disney World story times all synced up. And that'll be exciting. But for those who are maybe new listeners and haven't heard that tale of woe, I suck at vacations. I'm really bad at vacations. I don't have good vacations. Like Disney World was horrible. You know, my wife and I, we've left early on multiple vacations. We just don't enjoy vacations. So I was out in Seattle visiting the fellas. Got some friends out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were going to go hiking and everything. We went hiking last year, which was pretty fun, except for the fact that I couldn't walk for a good 3 days afterwards.
You feel better now because you're a biker?
Well, let's just hang in there.
Okay, sorry.
Let's just hang in. Let's not get too excited about my increased hiking prowess. So I fly out to Seattle. You know, we hang out for a couple days. We're having a good time. And that's time for the hike. It's time for the hike. So we're... Well, I should mention I fell in the water. I fell in a lake.
Oh, that
in
Seattle. Was... Yeah. I saw that. And your video camera was damaged.
It was damaged. It still shoots video, but the audio, not there. So unfortunately, no hiking report this year.
No, everybody's been asking.
I know. Well, there's another reason for no hiking report. Okay.
Oh, no. Hear. Oh, my gosh.
So, no, I haven't told you any of this.
No, I don't know any of this.
Now, I just want to pause, and at risk of giving away the fact that it turned into another miserable vacation, this story is not funny to me yet, but I'm okay if all of you want to laugh at it.
Okay.
So feel free to laugh away. No. So, okay, so we were going to the West Coast Trail on Vancouver Island in Canada. And here's what we'd heard. We specifically chose an easier hike than last year, because last year was a tough hike. So this is what we knew, is that the first 5 kilometers of the 40 or so kilometers we were going to be hiking, first 5 kilometers, pretty brutal. Lots of up and downs and everything. After that, relatively flat.
Okay.
And then eventually you're going to get to beach hiking. It's going to be great. So nice, easy hike. You just got to get through those first 5 kilometers. So we're up in Canada, and it's the day of, and first day of the hike. And so we get through those first 5 kilometers, and they take a long time. It's tough hiking, but we're done. We're done with them.
Okay.
We take a break for lunch, and we just think, okay, we got 8 more kilometers to go. We're going to fly through these. Nice, easy rest of the day. It's going to be flat. It's going to be great. Camp on the beach tonight. Well, the thing was that the trail was kind of flooded and not very well maintained.
Oh, no.
And so it was like walking through a swamp for the next 8 kilometers.
Oh, no.
And so you had like different portions where mud would come up to your knees, and you'd be like on the bank of this 10-foot mud thing with no way around it. And what you'd have to do is take your trekking poles and like kind of tap below the surface to see if you could find a log to walk on.
Oh, my gosh.
And I wasn't wearing good pants because I was wearing some jeans, which are not good hiking pants. But I thought, okay, I mean, it's going to be a fairly easy hike today. And so I was stupid and didn't take the advice of people. Said, maybe you want to change those. So I was wearing bad pants. And so end of the day, get to the camp like 6-7 hours later. It takes forever to get through these last 8 kilometers. And I can't walk. I can't walk.
You literally cannot
move. I cannot move. Well, I can, like, shuffle. But the problem is that without getting too graphic here, both of my inner thighs, as well as my buttocks, are completely raw from chafing.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I got to do something about this. So I get a little ointment, a little anti-chafing powder. I head up to the bathroom and take care of this. Well, I put the ointment on me, and I howl in pain. Like, I'm literally screaming uncontrollably because of how much it hurts to put the ointment onto my body.
Oh, my gosh.
At this point. So I think, okay, we're going to give this a night, and we're going to hope it clears up tomorrow morning. Well, it doesn't clear up tomorrow morning. I'm in just as bad of shape. I can't walk.
So what are your friends doing? Like, are they like, we're stuck here?
No. Like, at first, I'm thinking, I don't know what to do, because I haven't really told them about what's going on.
So oh, you haven't told them.
Then in a series of panic attacks and anxiety breakdowns, I spill the beans. Say, I can't walk, guys. I literally can't move. I'm in enormous amounts of pain. You know, oh, I put the ointment on, and I howled in pain. And so, long story short, we wind up being evacuated from the beach.
Why?
Because I can't go anywhere. I can't move. And there's
wait, what do you mean evacuated?
I mean, evacuated. I mean, they send the boat.
Who sent the boat?
The trail patrol, the Canada Trail Patrol. So one of the guys...
Wait, so you had a guide, is that what I'm hearing? Or no?
No, we didn't have a guide, but we had a phone number. And so one of the guys in the group, because we're camping on the beach, and so one of the guys in the group manages to get a cell phone signal. Okay. So he calls the Canada number that's on and they send the boat. So they say, we're going to send the boat. So they send the boat.
Okay.
And like, so they, you know, they take us all back, and it's just horribly embarrassing, because at this point I've had multiple anxiety attacks. I can't walk, you know, and so they... And obviously, we told the guys what's what. And so, you know, they kind of come and they check you out and see how you're doing and everything. And, like, they know I was having anxiety. Oh. So they're like, oh, you know, you can tell from the questions they're asking you that they want to find out, when we get you on the boat, are you just going to, like, flip a nut and, like, dive into the water and kill yourself and everything? So I'm like, no, I'm good with the boat.
Yeah.
I'm not anxious about the boat. Get me on the boat, you know? And so they had to, it was kind of wild, because there was a boat out in the water, and then they had a raft, and so they had to row us in the raft to the boat. Oh, we got a pretty sweet boat ride back.
So at any point, was it possible that your friends would continue the hike and you would go home or go to a hotel or something without them?
No, because we were kind of out in the middle of nowhere, so there's a couple of them were thinking of hiking back, but we wound up sticking together, and so it really wouldn't have been, there was nowhere to stay.
Were they all kind of like, yeah, this is kind of sucked, I want to go home?
A couple of them were pretty happy that I suffered.
Like they got to use you as an excuse?
Kind of a Christ-like figure, if you think about
it. There it is, okay.
I gave up my body for... so, yeah, then after that, it was okay. Hung around with the fellas in Seattle, drank some beer, but it was a... pretty miserable vacation.
Oh my gosh. Talk about when you fell. How did that happen?
Well, I didn't fall.
How did you lose your camera?
Oh, when I fell in the water? Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was earlier. So we were at the Seattle Arbor. I thought you meant at the hike. I was at the Seattle Arboretum, and kind of a I don't know what the word is, a sign of things to come. It was very muddy. And so it's like, so here's the situation. It's like a boardwalk, okay? And, you know, a boardwalk, they have, like, the edge boards that are a little bit bigger, and then you have all the planks in between.
Yeah.
So the edge boards are a little higher, so they're not muddy. So on one side of me is lots of mud. I'm wearing sandals, and I don't want to walk through the mud. Okay. On the right side of me is the lake, and I'm not good at balancing, you see. Here's the thing. I'm not a balancer. So I start walking, and the first couple steps go okay, and then I kind of feel my weight shifting to the right.
Oh, no.
And I realize I'm kind of in trouble, and I try and save it. I try and save it. Can't save it. Down I go into the water, and that's what happened.
My gosh.
So that was my trip to Canada.
So on a scale of 1 to 5, what did you give it?
Oh, well, the hike part was a 1.
Mm-hmm.
I liked hanging out with the guys.
So you kind of, I mean, in a sense, it sounds like it ended well. Like, you had just relaxing time then with your friends.
Yeah, I mean, I had to suffer the abject humiliation of having complete emotional and physical breakdown on a beach in Canada. But after that, besides that, it was fun.
That is a pretty good one.
So, another Ben DiBono vacation for your amusement.
Wow. When are you ever going to do a good one?
I don't know. It's been suggested to me that, like, you know, Discovery Channel or something needs to find me and then pay me to go on vacations and just film my misery.
No. That's bad.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to this.
I don't even know what we're going to.
Listener feedback. Question of the day. What was your favorite or least favorite thing about Dawn of the Planet of the Apes? Seth writes, I love that so much of it depended on the performance of the motion capture actors and technology. I also thought Jason Clark, who played Malcolm, was tremendous. Actually disagree with that last part.
Yeah.
But motion capture, we can be on the same page. Paul Lewis says, he must be joking. I doubt many people have ever seen it. I had no intention of seeing it and don't plan on it now. I mean, why, really? That's got to be a joke.
Maybe he thinks you're referring to the old ones.
Oh, maybe he does.
I don't know.
Yeah. Harold writes, I liked that there was no true evil characters. What? Koba was totally evil.
Yeah, completely.
Even those characters that went off the rails, you could at least see where they were coming from. The end destruction scene was amazing. They had a weight to them, which is different than the destruction in a Transformers movie. It's all debris, smoke times 1 million. Your eyes are overwhelmed. Here it was more realistic. Speaking of realistic, the motion capture is simply amazing. And finally, Chloe writes, sci-fi is at its best when it functions as a mirror and forces the viewers to look at their own reflection. I loved that the apes were the main characters and that we got a good look at their society. I also appreciate that both sides of the conflict had pretty clear motivations for their actions and each had their share of malcontents.
Yikes. Yes, we are in the minority, Matt.
So thanks, everybody, for writing in.
Yeah, thank you.
We did disagree, but still, good that you enjoyed it. We're glad for happiness in others.
Yeah.
We just don't think it's the best.
That's right.
It's actually on my list either fourth or sixth or third.
It's in flux.
Well, that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
And I'm Ben DiBono.
We are the Sci-Fi Christians, signing off.
All right, goodbye. Stupid Canada.
So now do you hate Canada?
I think so.
It would have been worse if you would have got stuck there. Like, well, if you forgot your passport or lost your passport.
Totally.
All right. Well, so long, folks.
Yeah, everybody.
I'm back here again with another little add-on. I didn't mention that there is a TV show about the Planet of the Apes, and I actually own it on DVD. Bought it back in 2001, again, after I was super into this franchise. I watched all 5 movies. I just seen the Tim Burton remake. And, yeah, so I bought the TV series. I've never watched it, so I'm not positive. I think there's only 14 episodes or something like that. But yeah, you can definitely check that out as well. I think it takes place in a time period prior to Taylor's ship crashing on the Planet of the Apes in the original movie. So yeah, you can check that out. There's some comic books I've never read, but that look pretty good in some ways. I heard something like the Planet of the Apes comic books have been in publication ever since 1968 or something crazy like that. So it's been around for a long time. Tons of Planet of the Apes movies or Planet of the Apes comics coming out from Marvel and Boom Studios and Dark Horse. So yeah, and some of these books actually sounded kind of interesting that we talked about. So lots of Planet of the Apes stuff out there. Still a fan of this franchise after all this time, even though maybe the movies aren't extraordinary. I think they're important to film history. So I guess that's all from here. So long, folks. This podcast is a proud member of the
Crossover Nexus,
a group of podcasts and blogs exploring faith and pop culture. Find more podcasts that engage your spirit and imagination at
www.crossovernexus.com.
And I think we just let the music fade out and we stop talking.
All right.
Well, good job on that.
Yeah, we knocked it out of the park.